This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, David Grossman, is one of Israel's leading writers. He's relieved that his country's occupation of the West Bank seems to be ending. He wrote about the occupation in his novel, The Smile of the Lamb, and his journalistic study, The Yellow Wind. His recent book, Sleeping on a Wire, is about Arabs living within Israel. We invited Grossman to share his impressions of the peace process, but first we talked about his new novel, which is about an Israeli boy named Aaron who is approaching puberty. It's called The Book of Intimate Grammar, and as the title may suggest to you, both the character of Aaron and writer David Grossman are passionate about language.
I have this strong desire to call things in my own words. I want to name things in my own words and not to succumb to the outer language, to the clichés, to the slogans, to words that people try to put in my mouth or try to manipulate me to think that this is the truth. You know, Aaron, he establishes a kind of a hospital for sick words, words that were misused by the others, and therefore he wants to purify them, and he has a whole ceremony of doing so, and when he purifies them, only then he feels he is entitled to express them out. And I think this is something that is very, very deep in me. And because of that, I think that that book is not only about childhood and about having a soul, having a body, but it's about the roots of an artist.
What's one of the words that end up in Aaron's hospital for sick words?
Well, there are... In the English translation, my translator, Betsy Rosenberg, chose words that will sound, words with L, the letter L. So there is velvet and bell and gazelle and some other words. They are just, you know, they are just casual words, but the words that I chose and she chose. But once you really direct yourself to these words, once you do not just say them, but you... as if call them at the right name. Yes, you give them the right name from the beginning. Suddenly they are recreated. This is the origins of writing. This is the first urgent desire to start to write with your own words. I think, oh, I'm getting too excited about it. But, no, but this is writing. You see, this is all about, because all the stories were told already. We all know and we are all familiar with the facts and the stories and all the emotions. The question is, how strong is the oven, the stove, the fire in which you remold the words and the language? What is the inner musicality of your story? And this can be achieved only if you really believe that you must reinvent this intimate grammar.
Your novel is called The Book of Intimate Grammar. And there's a scene where Aaron, your main character, the adolescent, is you know, learning English. And he learns the present continuous tense. I am sleeping. I am walking. The words that end in ing. And he's so taken with that because there's no equivalent in Hebrew. Does that fascinate you also?
Yes, of course. You see, we in Hebrew, we have a quite problematic relationship with time. We have an enormous past. We have very abrupt present. And we have only one short future. And I was so fascinated to see that you have this, you all different kind of pasts, and this present continuous, which gave me and gives my Aaron a feeling of, you know, a very long happening. I am jumping, I am thinking, you know, it even sounds so beautifully. Aaron, who is a child that looks at reality through a magnifying glass, he sees every nuance and every shade. For him, this is the right atmosphere. So in parts of the book, he's Aaroning. He's Aaroning this slow meditation into himself, into his intimate grammar.
Your new novel is set just before the Six-Day War. I'm wondering if when you were growing up, you assumed that you would go into the military, and how you felt about that?
not only that I assumed, but I was very, I waited for that. I think the moment, well, there are two things. When I was born, everybody came to my mother and told her, listen, when David will be 18, he will not have to go to the army because there's going to be peace. Well, now, even when we are on the edge of peace, we don't say that. Yes, we know that for some decades we shall have to go to the army. And on the other hand, it is such an important part of being an Israeli, of the way every Israeli, especially every Israeli man, regards himself, being part of the army, being there, having bearing the responsibility of a soldier and all this stuff, that I was quite eager to go to the army when I was Aaron's age, unlike Aaron, yes, who is so excommunicated from everything. I think it was later, after my military service, that I started to feel that, well, it was not meant for me.
Where did you reach that conclusion that it wasn't meant for you?
Well, first of all, even in the army, I was very privileged that, in a way, people left me alone to do whatever I want, and there was not, almost not serious clashes between my very desperate need to be alone, to be an individual, and this huge machine of the army. And I never was asked to do things that were contradictory to my beliefs or to the way I want to look at myself or to remember myself at that age. I think it was a mixture of luck and the fact that people knew what I thought and what I think about things that are being done. And right now, for example, I go, like every other Israeli man, I go for 44 days each year for reserve service. And I still do it until now. You know, it's quite a long time. I know now, and it's very clear to me that there are things I will not do. I'll not go to serve in the occupied territories. I will not be involved in any action against other people. But since the situation of Israel is as it is until now, and since we are still at quite concrete risks, I cannot make the further step and saying I will not take part in any army.
My guest is David Grossman. His new novel is called The Book of Intimate Grammar. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Israeli novelist and journalist David Grossman. Now that the peace process has begun, can you imagine living in an Israel that isn't surrounded by enemies?
It's a very difficult question for me, although it's a very wished for situation. I look for it, but I don't know what does it mean to live life without an enemy. I never lived life without an enemy. It might sound a little strange for you, because here in the United States you do not feel, or you never felt really an existential danger. Yes, you had tension with the former Soviet Union, but it was not an existential danger that you felt it every day. But for us, as I said before, the proximity of death is something very, 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 very near. We know it. It's very, very concrete. And you know, I just the other day there was an interview with a young couple in Israel. And the young wife said in a very sweet voice that she wishes to have 3 children, so if one of them is killed in the army, still she will have 2 left. I'm talking about that concrete knowledge of death, this unbearable lightness of death that is conveyed through umbilical cords. Now, to live life that are not shaped by the existence of an enemy will be something totally different because so many things will change. Even the language probably will change, the literature that we are writing, because so many words now, they echo the beating of a drum, yes? Mm-hmm. Because of our experience and our actual situation, maybe our literature would become more loose, the language will be thinner. It will not echo so many memories and so many tragedies. All this will happen.
You have 2 sons, I believe.
And a daughter, hey.
Oh, 2 sons and a daughter.
Yeah, come on. Can you she will write a protest letter.
Do you see them growing up in a different atmosphere that is shaping them differently than the atmosphere you grew up and shaped you?
Yes, I was part of a society that was mobilizing itself after the Shoah. I was born 9 years after the Shoah in 54.
The Holocaust.
Yeah, the Holocaust. Yeah, I don't like this word because it has a meaning of sacrifice, and I don't think that someone sacrificed himself or was sacrificed for others' sake.
What is Shoah?
Shoah is a huge calamity, and it is a word that is used only or should be used only to describe this historic event in the Second World War. Holocaust, it has some echoes I do not like. I think the word Shoah, it's not a very difficult word to say. I think that is the right word for it. Mm-hmm. I was born 6 years after Israel was established. So it was a society in a struggle, a built-up society. Millions of people, more than the people that inhabited Israel, poured in from 70 countries and tried to crystallize the kind of identity. And when you are in such an endeavor, everything is called up in the favor of that effort. Well, now everything has changed. We are more loose now. Everything is open. There is no one authority, yes, one authoritative voice. There is no one narrative in Israel. Many voices, there is not one center, but many margins. And it shows in every aspect of life. And also my children, yes, for them Israel is something that is taken for granted. The language, the Hebrew language, is something that is taken for granted. For me, it is still a miracle. I remember that less than 100 years ago, it was not a spoken language. Eliezer ben Yehuda had to reinvent it from the Bible, from the Mishnah and the Talmud. And now it exists, and Israel exists. And, well, sometimes even someone that was lucky enough to have a miracle, well, he become quite indifferent to that miracle after some years. But I'm quite sensitive to miracles, and I think we live there in a reality that still is miraculous, because in no other place on earth, we, the Jewish people, have a place in which he can implement his heritage and culture and values.
What does it mean to you personally to be a witness to what appears to be the beginning of the end of the Israeli occupation?
I'm very glad. Simply, I mean, I wrote so much about it and talked so much about it. I think it's wonderful thing for both peoples, not only for the Palestinians, but also for us Israelis. I think that, for example, for the first time we are going to have a future. Can you imagine, Terry? It's something that is taken for granted here. Having future. We, in our psyche, deep there, we do not really believe, or we did not believe until, let's say, a couple of years ago, that we have a future.
So you think this is actually going to be a time, or it needs to be a time, of great reflection for Israelis about what they want their future to be.
Exactly. It is, no, only now, after 47 years of independence, we shall start to be, because until now, even though we did wonderful, hilarious things over there, yes, I do not make light of any of them. And we have some very important creations in Israel. But yet, so many parts of our life, so many profound questions were suspended in a way, and only now they will start to be asked properly. For example, we are the Jewish state, but what do we take from Judaism? You see, all the time that there is such a dichotomy between being an Israeli and being a Jew, as if there is a gap, unbridgeable gap between them. And I think that right now we shall find or start to find a way to interweave the two. What do we take from 4,000 years of Jewish history and from 2,000 years of living in the exile, in the diaspora? Do we stress only the tragedies and the calamities as we are doing now in our education, or maybe we want to pass on to our kids something more positive, more healthy even, because it's sometimes those memories that we were brought up on, they can make us succumb or subjugated to this fatalistic conception of ourselves, of having no future.
David Grossman, his new novel is called The Book of Intimate Grammar. He lives in Jerusalem. This is Fresh Air.